is Mark Weber? He's a self-made business executive here to help you find your success. From the New York City projects to the Avenue Montaigne in Paris, his global success story in the luxury world of fashion is inspirational. He's gone from clerk to CEO twice. Mark is classic proof that the American dream is alive and well. Here's your host of Always in Fashion, Mark Weber.
I want it all. I want it all. I want it all. And I want it now.
Adventure seeker on an empty street. Just an eddy creeper, light on his feet. It ain't much I'm asking, I heard him say. Gotta find me a future, move out of my way. I want it all, I want it all.
This is Mark Weber. This is Strictly Business tonight on Always in Fashion. And tonight, not only do I want it all, I'm considering compromise. I'm thinking, I'm questioning compromise. We all know we have to compromise. The question is on what and when. The definition of compromise, I hadn't given this much thought. Let me tell you what Webster says about the word compromise. Compromise is an agreement or settlement of a dispute that is reached by each side making concessions, or settle a dispute by mutual concessions. In a million years, or if you offered me $1 million, I would never have guessed that is the definition of compromise. I've always viewed compromise as a willing to adjust perspective, a decision to be amicable, a decision to offer respect and understand someone else's point of view, not a dispute. But nonetheless, it says it in the dictionary. Think about your wife. She wants to go to a lovey-dovey musical comedy or a love story, and I or you want action. You agree to reset and go her way. That's compromise. Every business negotiation to some extent revolves around compromise. Both sides are looking for something they specifically want, and they will not give in on their integrity, or either party will not give up when they think it's important, but both will win and they'll walk away. A compromise they'll make, not a dispute. But nonetheless, the definition of compromise, an agreement or settlement of a dispute that each side is making concessions. I don't care what Webster has to say. This is Weber's world, and I think of compromise as a two-sided coin. Compromise is a thought process. In my head, I have a devil and I have an angel, perhaps. As the definition stated, battling for control in my head, the angel and the devil. The angel wants to make nice. The devil wants to take the hardline stance. No compromise there. But maybe, just maybe, think about it. Maybe I got it backwards or reversed. Maybe the angel is telling me not to settle, to stand up for what I believe. And maybe the devil is saying to me, compromise, it's not important. You're not undermining your values. Fascinating when you think about it that way, looking at compromise from both sides. In reality, tonight, I'm thinking no compromise, steadfast in my principles and my opinions, no wavering, stubborn, invigorated, ignited, convinced, principled, and sure. For me tonight, our show, our concept for introspection and discussion with that song from Queen, I want to talk all or nothing at all. When perfect is staring in the face, when your gut tells you you're right, should you compromise? I think this makes for a fascinating and intelligent night on Always in Fashion. Speaking of perfect staring me in the face, my son and co-host, Jesse Weber.
Listen, I don't know about this topic, but I do know your introduction of me is back on. Perfect. I like that. Perfect. Calling me perfect.
To me, you're perfect, but do I think...
Well, listen. Whoa. Don't just stop right there. Before you say another word, it sounds like you're going to compromise on my introduction, and I don't like it if you're not going to talk about compromise. Just stick with me being perfect. When you told me what the topic is this week, you know what my mind went straight to?
What?
Poker.
Clever.
Look, you're not the only clever one on the show. I'm sure you're going to cover business tonight. I'm sure you're going to bring in a faction or luxury component. But what I thought of as a lifestyle component was poker, because poker is all in. That's the meaning of the show, all in. In fact, it's all or nothing, right?
The theme of tonight's show,
yeah.
All or nothing at all.
See, now poker is actually becoming a national pastime sport. I guess that's the way to say it. It's a sport in the U.S. And also around the world. And the key fascination, what everybody waits for in every hand, is will the person go all in? No compromise. They go all in. They risk everything. All or nothing at all. And I thought about this and I said to myself, huh, one of my very good friends is a professional poker player. So I thought about bringing him on tonight, and we'll talk a little bit about poker and all in and all that.
Clever. And I like it. That's something for all of us to look forward to, Jesse. But you're right. I have a lot of subjects I want to cover tonight.
Well, recently I've been asking, where do you come up with these ideas? You know, every week you come up with interesting show ideas. Tonight is all or nothing at all. So where'd you come up with that idea?
Well, you're not the only one with a friend tonight making a contribution to our show. One of my former associates, actually, who I kept in touch with. It's a she. She's single and looking to get married again. And again, she's looking for number three.
I don't think three's a charm there, but good luck to her.
That's funny. Anyway, in talking with her, I asked her, what are you looking for? You know, what kind of man are you trying to find?
I'm sure this went over well. You always get yourself into trouble.
Yeah, I got to be careful. Whenever I think I'm funny, I get myself in trouble. Always. Anyway, I wrote this down. She told me she's looking for, wait till you hear this. She's looking for someone handsome, fit, slim, loyal, honest, smart, fun, athletic, love to travel, loves the beach, skiing, tennis, yoga, loves to walk, hug, and kiss, is financially secure, loves family and dogs, and has to want an LTR. By the way, Jesse, you know what an LTR is?
Yeah, it's a long-term relationship. It sounds like she wants a robot.
Gosh, talk about no compromise. She's looking for the perfect man, and I said so. I said, you know, listen, where are you going to find that guy? It's a fictional character in the movies. And I said, you're not going to find it. What are you going to do? You want all or nothing? And that's where the show came from, Jesse, all or nothing. Now, I will tell you, when I was thinking about it, I did say her before I closed the subject, are you looking for the perfect man or are you looking for the perfect man for you? Kind of got her there, but she's still staying with all or nothing at all. That's what caught my attention this week. That's what got me thinking and brought us to this point tonight on Always in Fashion, the title of tonight's show, All or Nothing at All. So let's start off the show with a concept about business. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Madison Square Garden, to the fight of the century. Actually, how did I get here? Let's remind you, this show is called All or Nothing at All tonight. And I'm talking about compromise or not. And I'm talking about a woman who I know, a friend, told me she wants all or nothing. She gave me a million characteristics of what she wants in a man. And if she doesn't get them all, she's not doing anything.
And now you're Mark Buffer. You're the third brother in the Buffer family.
Let's get ready to rumble! Why am I talking about this? Because my mind went from the perfect man to the perfect executive. And I want to talk to you about what is the perfect executive without compromise. Now, where does the fight come in? I did not have a straight ride to the top. I had so many ups and downs, I can't count them. I had so many disappointments, I can't count them. But I will tell you one thing that was consistent with me. I wanted it all. And I refuse to give up. I wanted it all. And that boxing story is a story of me and one of my close friends, a fellow named Stuart Rosenthal.
I love Stuart.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I met him my first, I don't know, month or so in the company, and we became good friends. And every day at lunchtime, when we didn't have things to do, him and I would take a walk through Central Park and talk about our lives and what's going on in business. And I'll never forget taking a fall in the company. Someone I was competing with beat me to the punch, got the job I wanted, and I went backwards. He went ahead, and I was down. And I was thinking about giving up. And he stopped me and grabbed my arm and looked in my face and says, "Don't you ever talk like that again. This is a 12-round fight. You may have just lost the second round, but this fight isn't over. You have to remember that you have something that no one else has. You're dealing with these smart guys. They're all woodheads. Yeah, they know what they're doing. Yeah, they know more than us when it comes to all this administrative stuff. We're going to learn it. But you can't learn how to be creative, Mark. And don't you give in. It's a 12-round fight, and you're only in the second round." I never forgot that story, and I tell it to you. It isn't over till it's over. Where have we heard that? I think that was Yogi Berra. But back to my default is business, and what is the perfect executive? And I'll tell you what I think. In all the topics, in all my opinions, doesn't make me right, but I do have a point of view. Let me build for you a perfect man.
A man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
So yeah, I'm going to help build you to be a better man, or in that case, a better woman, and talk about an executive. First of all, if I was building the perfect executive, there'd be no time restraints. While I lived a career on balance, no question about it, there was balance between work and family, I believe I was better for the company being balanced and happy, but I had no time restraints. I worked always. I was kind of like a spy. I noticed everything. My eyes kept looking behind me, forward, in windows, everything. I looked at cars, packages in Whole Foods, men's style walking down the street, women anywhere, put together well. I looked at soccer fields. I looked at black tie dinners. I was always reading on culture, magazines, the internet, Fortune, Inc., Business Insider, culture, Hollywood, books, all of this keeping me current. The news, TV, movies, I was always on. I'm always looking for knowledge and stimulus. You know, let me reset just to make sure if you're just tuning in what we're doing. Right now, I'm talking about building the best executive you can without compromise, because tonight, it's all or nothing at all. What is the perfect all-in or nothing person to lead a company? So first, I think unlimited time, which I just devoted to you. Then there's the question of linear or abstract. Linear executives are no nonsense. They go from point A to point B, short and sweet. Abstract are the creative, a touch meandering to get to the conclusions, but they're perfect or nothing at all. All executives that I look at, I prefer abstract. I'll tell you what, the truth is, sooner or later, I don't care if you have an accountant or whatever, you put them the head of the company, they're going to stop thinking creatively or they're not going to be successful. You see, the price of leadership is smart. When you look at my career, going back to my 12-round fight, I was competing against some of the smartest people you can imagine. Every single one of them was smart. Smart was the price of entry. But the fact that I had a creative slant to my personality, the fact that I looked at things differently, gave me a leg up on everyone. And that's why in the end, I won that 12-round fight. Now, not everyone is creative, and not every creative leader, in my view, has it all. Their approach to every issue, though, every problem, is a combination of knowledge, curious mind, obviously the tried and true, and a heavy dose of new and original. The perfect executive, Al Spiché, and the thinking out of the box nonsense, but I'll tell you their names. Welch, Musk, Branson, Gates, Nolan, and even Queen or Frank Sinatra's prose to music. Tonight, our theme songs are all or nothing at all. Rounding out. Let me just finish rounding out the perfect executive. The perfect executive is always curious, wants to learn, listen, ask questions, constantly listening and learning. After all, you can't learn while you're talking. The consummate leader has to be compassionate, has to like and appreciate people. Leadership is all about people. And after all, if you're going to be a leader, you have to hear what's on their mind. You as a leader must be well-dressed. You have to be the role model for your company. And yes, you need Lastly, to be a great communicator. You set the goals. You have to be able to articulate them to the people you're working with, to the people above you, and to your constituents outside, your consumers and your suppliers. Now, important when I talk about the business executive for all in or nothing at all, what's the kind of person we need to be perfect in that role? You notice I didn't say what discipline that person has to come from. You can come from sales or design, finance, legal. You can be an operator or administrator. No matter what, you have to have it all to be great. Otherwise, you're nothing at all. We'll be back in a moment with All or Nothing at All.
Always in Fashion.
This is Mark Whipple. This is Always in Fashion. In 1998, orthopedic surgeon Dr. Taryn Rose brought comfort to the world of luxury shoes. She was trained as a surgeon and knew that women deserved to feel comfortable in their shoes and developed shoes that were designed to make the human body comfortable. She partnered with design experts and tech innovation to create a collection of shoes that looked beautiful and yet they were incredibly comfortable. Taryn Rose footwear is about luxurious materials, sophisticated silhouettes, and comfort. They feature innovative comfort technology. Ladies, you want to be comfortable in your shoes. You want to be safe in your shoes. But more importantly, you want to look great in your shoes. Taryn Rose, developed by this brilliant surgeon. The Taryn Rose woman is refined and refuses to sacrifice comfort for style, or for that matter, style for comfort. These shoes are perfect for women who think on their feet, but not about their feet. Discover the latest Taryn Rose collection at TarynRose.com. Taryn Rose, the luxury of comfort.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber.
This is Mark Weber. This is Always in Fashion. Tonight it's business as usual, and we're talking about the concept of all or nothing at all. Whole subject of compromise. But now I want to lighten it up. I want to have some fun. Jesse said in the beginning of the show that when I told him we're going to do all or nothing at all, he had a great idea. The first thing that went to his mind was poker. All in, he said. That's poker. That's true. If you don't get it all in, you're getting nothing. I want it all in life, or I'm not interested. Now, gambling, if nothing else, is risk-taking, high-energy decision-making. This certainly speaks to business. I now want us to speak life. Let's have some fun. Jesse, what do you think about this now? You said earlier you have somebody you want to talk to.
Yeah, we could talk about poker, but why not get somebody who's very experienced in this, somebody who's been playing in the World Series of Poker since I've known him, a very good buddy of mine.
Wait, before you say his name, I have something to play, a friend of mine.
So you're telling me it's a matter of probability and odds? I was worried there was some chance involved.
Yeah, any of you seem to play with the best hand wins.
So that will be what you call bluffing.
You've heard the term. Then you'll also know that in poker you never play your hand. You play the man across from you.
And you're good at reading people.
Yes, I am. Which is why I've been able to detect an undercurrent of sarcasm in your voice.
You'll know how short our money is in good hands.
You don't think this is a very good plan, do you?
So there is a plan. I got the impression we were risking millions of dollars and hundreds of lives on a game of luck. What else can you surmise, Mr. Bond?
So if there's anything that represents all or nothing at all tonight, high stakes poker tops the list.
So might not be James Bond, but he's my buddy Ira Marcus. Let's give him a call right now.
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Hey, Ira.
Hello.
So you're on the radio right now. I was telling a little bit, since I've known you, you've been playing poker. How many years have you been playing poker?
Wow. Well, I'm 31 now. I would say I've been playing since around 16 years old.
That's wow. Hey, Ira, I got a quick question. What do you think made poker so exciting in the United States?
I think a lot of it actually goes back to the movie Rounders with Matt Damon. Have you seen this movie?
Great movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I think that brought poker to the forefront, and then having basically a non-professional win the World Series of Poker main event in Chris Moneymaker, I believe in 2003, created the poker boom, as they call it.
Mm-hmm. And just as a side, do you think it's waning at all? You think it's still as powerful as it was? I don't see as much of it on television as I did.
Yeah, so I think that's a common belief, that it's not as popular as it once was, probably because in 2011, the federal government basically banned online poker in the U.S., but it's making a slow comeback. And the World Series of Poker main event total players this year actually reached the second highest total it's ever reached.
Really? So that's in Vegas?
In Vegas,
you play there?
Wait. How much was it?
It was almost 8,000 players at a $10,000 buy-in.
8,000 players?
At a $10,000 buy-in. That's a lot.
So what happens? If I want to play, I show up with $10,000, I sit down?
That's an option. There's tournaments you can play for probably as low as $100, $500, where you can win your way in, but you can also buy your way in for $10,000.
Now, why can't I win? What is it that you know that I don't know?
First of all, I would say a lot of the odds, like I know in the back of my head, and also the ability to read players. I think a lot of it is probably patience. In the main event is 8 days straight of 12 hours a day playing. So if you're not patient and you have a mental lapse for one hand, it could be over for you.
Yeah, I remember I would text you and you'd be like, I would say, what's going on? You're like, I'm in the middle of playing. And you'd be like getting dinner as you're doing it. You've been there for hours upon hours upon hours.
So it's marathon poker. Let me ask you a question. You're sitting there and you say you read the faces, you think you're reading people. And I watch it on TV with all the hoods, the sunglasses, the hats, etc. It's hard to see what anybody's doing. They're all, you know, like statues. How do you read someone like that?
Those players are much more difficult to read. You can look for some chip placement tells or hand tells. They might place their chips in certain ways or hold the cards in certain ways, but it makes it extremely more difficult to do that.
So they're nervous gestures that you're looking at? Is that what they are when you say the chip holds and stuff?
Yeah, where they place their chips. Sometimes a common tell is if you place your chips directly on the cards, it usually means you have a good hand but not a great hand, but you tend to continue in the hand. So there's common things like that that you can look for. But I know that there's many pros that actually want to ban sunglasses and hoods and all that to make poker as it used to be.
Do people fake tells?
Yeah, there are the very good players fake tells. That's part.
Meaning
of
that they're going to give you a signal that they have a good hand or a bad hand, and they're really fooling you.
Yes,
like Casino Royale.
Yeah, or the Oreos in Rounders. Yeah. What was that guy's name?
You chick. He beat me.
Teddy KGB.
Yeah,
Teddy.
John Malkovich at his finest.
He was great. You say the other thing is, other than reading, you know the odds. What's the best you can have when you get dealt your two cards?
I mean, some people say they have favorite hands, but you always want aces because that's the best hand you can have and hold them.
Yeah, so what's the odds of winning when you get two cards that are aces?
It depends. There's several factors. It depends on how many players are in the hand. So the more players in the hand, it goes down the percentage you win because you're up against more people. But the percentage is very high against just one hand. Like, you should win. It just depends what the other
Yeah, with the other cards on.
Yeah, it depends what those are.
But like, with so much luck, you know, and then they turn over, what, the first three cards, if I'm not mistaken, correct? Now you have five cards to play with. Everyone has the same common three. And if you don't get another ace or another pair, you're still sitting with aces.
Right. Well, it's very hard to make a pair in any kind of poker, but in Hold'em specifically. If you get a pair, I think they say one in every 18 hands. Any pair, it could be twos, could be anything.
If you get a pair of twos, right, pocket twos, you going to bet on that heavy?
No.
Okay, so it depends how high your pocket is.
Yes, of course. A higher pair is obviously better. If it's a lower pair, you're trying to get a three of a kind, which is a one in eight on the flop. So the chances aren't that great.
But didn't Moneymaker bluff when he had nothing?
Yes.
So how does that pay off?
It's a calculated risk. I think you have to bluff at certain times, especially in the main event, to keep your chip stack going. Like you don't always have a hand, and the blinds and antes slowly raise, so you're forced to play. And sometimes you get invested in a hand, and some players are reluctant to fold at that point because you have so much of your chips invested. So you either bluff and hope you win and then continue, or you could be out of the tournament. Like, he could have been out of the tournament. In a cash game, which is a different style than tournament, there's a lot of players that will just play very strong hands, aggressively try to take down those hands, and that's it. And that's usually their style.
So when you show up in Vegas with 8,000 people, where do you think you're going to end up in the tournament? You ending up, you trying to compete to be in the last table?
My first goal is to get into the money, which is about the top 10 to 15%. You make your money back plus some. They changed the structure. So it used to be you would get double the buy-in, which is 20,000. I believe the first payout's around 15,000 now. But you still have to get to the top 1,000 or so players.
And does that mean you have to win your table?
No, you don't have to win the table. There's a different kind of tournament called the shootout tournament where you have to win your table to advance. But this, as players slowly get eliminated, they move you to tables where there's open seats.
And you bring the chips that you have, or you get a fresh start in chips?
No, the same chips. The same chips you start with are the same chips you have the rest of the way, and you hope to build it, and if you do, that's great. If not, you're out, and you can't buy back in. That's it for this year.
How tough is it to make a career as a poker player? I mean, what do you have to do? Do you play every day? Do you just wait for the big tournaments? Really, if you want to make a living doing it, how does it work?
So if you asked me this 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I'd say it was much easier to make a living doing it. I think that the skill gap is much more narrow now. The players are so much better. Like, the good players are now very good. So the gap is very small. There used to be a lot of players who weren't as great who would play, and you could take advantage of that. But now everyone is good.
So I show up, I'm easy money?
Yeah, I think it would be very hard for you to win.
So it is a professional sport now.
Yeah, it's definitely a skill game, absolutely.
All right, I've got another question for you.
Yes.
There's a lot of excitement sitting at that table. The adrenaline's running. It's a great feeling, I think, right?
Of course.
How do you replace it in real life?
It's funny that you ask that, because I've always been not chasing that, but I try to find that in other aspects of life, whether it's in competitive sports or different things, but it's hard to replace that feeling, especially the main event. You're going to a tournament with 8,000 people. I can win as much as maybe $8 million for first place. Mm-hmm. It's hard to replace that as a...
So there's like, a letdown. There's a letdown after the tournament.
After the tournament's over, yeah, there's a slight letdown.
It's like rock stars. They get up on that stage, they own the world, they're singing, they're doing great, everybody loves them, and then afterwards, it's a big letdown, I would think.
My question to you is, when you go all in, and whether you're, you know, every hand's different, you go all in, the feeling of waiting for the cards to turn, what is that like?
It depends. It depends if I'm ahead or behind on the hand. If I'm ahead, it's anxious both ways, because it's, you know that it could be the end of the tournament for you no matter what. Even if you are an 85% favorite to win the hand, there's still a 15% chance you can lose, and that could just happen. And
so what's the worst odds you would go all in and all or nothing?
I don't know. That's very hard. It's very situational.
Well, why would you do it when you're losing the hand?
I mean, sometimes you don't know you're behind, right? Like, you may just be wrong. Sometimes you're behind and it's very small behind, but there's so many chips in the middle that you have to take that chance. You've already committed so many of your chips.
But you're going all in. You're going all in. It's all or nothing. And if you're doing the calculations and you see you're behind and the odds are telling you you're behind, is it really worth it to give it all or nothing?
It can be. Let's say you start the hand with a million chips, and before any cards are in, you already put in 300,000 of those chips, 400,000 of those chips. And once the three cards come out, let's say you're 45% to win the hand, you might go with that because you've already committed so much of your chips that you feel like, well, 45%, not so bad, and I can end the hand with 2 million plus chips.
Now it starts to sound like gambling.
Yeah, there is.
I mean, you still had, in your scenario, 550,000 chips to play another hand if you're not feeling good about it.
Yeah, but it's situational, because then in the World Series, depending on the event, every hour or 2 hours, the blinds and antes raise, so the cost of poker goes up. So you have to make a decision on, do I have enough chips to continue to play how I want to play, or have I invested too much? Like, the term is pot committed. Am I committed to this pot that I feel like I have to go with it at this point?
Do amateur players go all in too easily? And I'll tell you why. I remember I was in Vegas. I was playing poker with my brother. I lost within 5 minutes. I went all in. He goes, "What did you have?" "Nothing." I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. That goes back to what I said in the beginning. I think it's a patience thing. You think that, and it goes back to a commitment thing. Like, you feel committed to this pot, and no one likes to lose. So even a hand, there's players that just can't give up hands. And that's a common amateur thing. Like, if they have aces, but the three cards, the flop comes jack, jack, 10, you could be very sure he has a jack, but you still, for some reason, they still can't fold it. And I think that what makes a very good player is the ability to fold very strong hands in those situations, because you have to be able to do that in order to.
You got
to
know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
Exactly.
So what's the best you've done so far?
Not in the main event, but in other World Series events, I have a final table appearance. But it's in the main event, I have a top 200 finish.
Out of 8,000.
Out of 8,000, yeah.
And why didn't you finish higher from your vantage point?
So I actually went all in with aces and lost to ace jack. So, and then, yeah, there's a jack on the flop and then a jack on the river, and that was it.
I remember seeing you on TV.
Yeah, that was a TV elimination for me, unfortunately.
So is it a happy life playing poker, playing all in or nothing at all?
I thoroughly enjoy it. I mean, as you said, it's hard to replicate that adrenaline thrill, and especially when it's something, when I sit down at the table, I look down at everyone else and I feel I'm better than usually everyone at the table, maybe except one player who I think may be a very good player, but I like my chances in those situations.
So it's all about confidence for you.
I think so, yeah.
And of course the cards.
And of course the cards. Good cards always help.
Well, listen, Ira, thank you very much. We're discussing tonight on the radio all or nothing at all, and I thought this would be a fun topic. So I appreciate you coming on. Jesse, I don't want you hanging out with this guy.
Why?
He's gambling.
He knows what he's doing. Yeah, I put my money on you, Ira.
Yeah, but it's still gambling. Ira, let me ask you a question. Here's one. This is a pet peeve of mine. Would you rather play poker or put your money in the stock market?
Well, I know how you feel about the stock market, but I'd rather play poker, because I'm gambling on me, right? I'd rather gamble on me than on someone else any day.
That's what I agree, because if you're going to go all or nothing at all, you better know what you're doing, and it is about you. Hey, Ira, thanks a lot.
Exactly.
Bye, buddy.
Of course. Anytime. Bye.
Well, anyway, that was funny, a little lifestyle. We'll come back to business in a minute tonight on All or Nothing at All on Always in Fashion.
Always in Fashion.
This is Mark Weber. This is Always in Fashion, and my favorite shoe brand, Acquitalia. Acquitalia is a very interesting shoe brand, made in Italy. That's where the Talia comes from. And Acqua, they're waterproof. This is a collection of men's and women's shoes that are not only contemporary and styled brilliantly, but they're also waterproof. So you guys and gals, you don't have to change your shoes in inclement weather. And I should tell you how comfortable they are. Not only are they fashion and style right, but they're comfortable. You can wear them wherever you go. Acquitalia designs are contemporary, yet there's a classic feel to them. They're easy to wear. They're elegant, yet they're for every day. High quality and low maintenance. The true foundation of timeless wardrobe. Something you could wear every day and not worry about it. Acquitalia is footwear that is made for discerning men and women who make bold moves and want to look their best without sacrificing fashion or comfort. You should explore the latest collection of Acquitalia.com. Acquitalia has amazing styles, beautiful fabrics, beautiful silhouettes. You should really look for them. You can find and explore Acquitalia's latest collection at Acquitalia.com or visit the flagship store at 965 Madison Avenue in Manhattan. Acquitalia, A-Q-U-A-T-A-L-I-A. Wherever the weather goes, they will take you. Made in Italy and waterproof. The best combination.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber.
This is Mark Weber, and I too want it all or nothing at all. That's our show tonight, All or Nothing at All. I guess wrapped up in that is compromise. Should you compromise? When you compromise? What do you compromise with? When it comes to your career, do you compromise on your future? That's what I want to talk about now. Jesse, you've only seen me more or less successful. You haven't seen all the crap I took coming up.
That's right. When I came about, when I was born, you're already pretty well established. I never saw the grind.
Yes, you did not. I want to talk about that a little because I, as I've said before, I didn't have a straight rocket to the top of my industry. I had so many ups and downs. I think I once quoted, my favorite quote of all was General Patton, who said, "It's not how far you fall, it's how high you bounce back." And my career was about bouncing back. I had so many ups and downs. I was a young executive. My first presidency, I was 34 years old. But at one point, I became the president of the largest division of our company, and I was rocking and rolling until one day, November 11th, 1998, I get called into the chairman's office. My boss, the president of the company, sitting there. I'm the division president. And they politely tell me that I will no longer be the president of the company, that they're moving me into the corporate office as corporate vice president of marketing and product development. I look at them and say, "What? What is that? You know what that is?"
"Nope."
"Me either." I said, "What does that mean?" They said, "Well, we have big plans. We have a big idea. We want you to come in here and relinquish your responsibility as president of the largest division in the company to come in here. We get a corporate title. We'll give you a nice little raise, and you're going to do that." I said, "I love what I'm doing. I don't want to come." And they said, "Well, it's not a debate. This is not a democracy. That's what's happening here." I said, "Who's going to report to me?" "Your assistant, Judy." I said, "I just went from running the largest division in this corporation. Now you're telling me I have one person working for my assistant?" "Yeah." Shocking. I mean, I was lost. Now, here's the good news. I wasn't fired, but what the heck is vice president of corporate marketing and product development? It was nothing, okay?
what a business card that is.
Yeah, oh my
gosh. Does that even
gosh.
Fit on a card?
Oh my gosh. Now I'm in the corporation. Oh, yeah, Mark, what's your title? Oh, I'm vice president of corporate marketing and product development. What do you do? I don't know.
You ever see Seinfeld? I work for Vanderlei Industries.
What do you do? I don't know. Well, it turns out it was a very, very sad part of my career. I was so happy being the president of the large division, and now all of a sudden I'm in some nebulous job and what to do. And I started to think about it. And when I heard it laid out to me, the company was about to embark on the outlet retail business for a number of the brands. And the then chairman of the company believed that we would have 2,000 stores. And the problem was, this was the Van Heusen company at the time. We were really only making shirts at the time. We didn't know how to make anything else. It just wasn't our forte. And I was being assigned to determine whether or not we could build some kind of organization that would fill in all the products you would need to have a retail store, namely all the women's products that women's divisions would need. Men's, I'll make it simple for you guys out there. We didn't make sweaters. We needed sweaters. We needed pants. We needed swimwear in the summer. We needed outerwear, jackets. We needed all these things. Sure, we knew dress shirts and ties, but we didn't know any of it. Mark, you're now in charge of developing this. Oh, really? Who's working for me? No one. We want you to do a study and determine whether or not this will make sense. Yikes. It was then I started to think and I saw my career pass before my eyes. I had a choice to make. What am I going to do? Am I going to stay with this? It looks like I'm out. I'm never going to make it back to where I was. And I made a fateful decision to fight it out and to go for it all or nothing at all. As the story went on, I did all the research and went back and forth to Asia. At the same time, I was recruiting designers, talking to them about their expertise, someone to do sweaters, someone to women's wear, etc. And I believed that I can get this done for the company. I built a process for them. I gave them a position paper. And believe it or not, they gave me the go-ahead to go forward. Now, as far as I was concerned, I'd never been more depressed in my career. I didn't think there was a future, but I wasn't giving up. And there's the lesson right away for you. Where are you? It's so easy to walk away. Can you estimate? Can you look at your chances? Can you believe that you could make something of what you're being handed? Can you make lemonade out of lemons? And I made the decision to stay with it. We put a business plan together that said in the first year we would probably import about $5 million for what at the time was 700 retail stores that were being built. I went out and I recruited all these designers. So if we had a retail concept that was like Ralph Lauren, Americana, great knitwear, I would try and recruit a Ralph Lauren designer. If we were trying to be modern, we had a Jeffrey Bean label at the time, we were building an outlet store called Jeffrey Bean, I would hire a modern designer from Calvin Klein or Kenneth Cole. And then I went out and recruited the best sourcing people I could find, people who traveled the world in Asia buying products to import to the United States. And I began to do this. The first year, the estimate was to do $5 million. It was a combination of finding the right products, designing the right products, and convincing our retail team that they would be better off buying it from me than the people they were comfortable buying with the outside. The incentive to buy from me was all the money would come into the company rather than to third parties who were making money selling to the company. 5 years the first year, $15 million the second year, $45 million the third year, and I got the okay to start hiring people. And I did. And I hired the right people. Fast forward 2 years. The first year, I didn't do $5 million. I imported $45 million. The second year, I didn't import $15 million. I imported $140 million. And by the third year, we were approaching $400 million in imports for all of the stores. It was a remarkable, remarkable, remarkable turnaround. And I went from vice president of corporate product development to president of Philips Van Heusen International. During this period in the 3 years, the story gets really interesting because all this money I was making for the company was in my division, PVH International. It eventually got transferred to the retail group. But the chairman of the retail group had a problem with this because he couldn't count on the money. It came to him at the end of the season. He couldn't show it. He couldn't show it in his profits. He couldn't increase his margins going in because I was making 15%, for example. Instead of him making 65%, he was making 50, and he felt it belonged. And because I was on the outs, I wasn't the guy I used to be. I was building back for whatever reason. Even though I had this tremendous success, the company decided to follow his course and eliminate PVHI and put all the profits in retail. And I was tasked with disassembling this division that I had built, my new home, my all or nothing at home. And even though I did everything right, here I found myself relinquishing another division, a place I didn't enjoy being. I'll never forget when the decision was made to support this chairman of retail. I was brought into a room. They told me to do this. I asked for two things. One, I said, I want you to do every effort you can to hire the 107 people that I hired for this organization to develop this $400 million worth of product. Give me your word that you'll try and bring as many of them in as you can. They gave me the word. And the second thing I asked, because I don't know where I'm going to end up now in the company, is there anything that that relates to what we're doing here that was because of lack of performance? Mark, no. Everything you did was beyond what we had expected. It was way beyond our expectations. You are to be commended, I promise you. I said, those are the only two things I'm going to care for, and thank you. And by the way, when will you know what's happening with me? Because I had no job. And for the first time, after 20 years of PVH and a stellar career, they told me they didn't know. In 8 weeks, they'll tell me what's going on after I transition the business into retail. This was the most uncomfortable 8 weeks of my life. Because here I am working for all or nothing, and now I'm looking at nothing. Where am I ending up? After all this time, all this investment, all this success, it looks like I'm going to be out of a job. I talked to my wife all the time about it, and she said, what are you worried about? My wife was always so cool. Nothing fazed her. What are you worried about? You're still Mark Weber. No one's going to take away anything you learned. You've managed to make a nice living. We've saved some money. We never lived over our head. We'll be just fine. Don't worry about it. 8 weeks in, no answer. 11 weeks in, no answer. But what happened was I was invited to a black tie dinner that the president of the company was being honored. There were probably 200-300 tables. I was sat at a table with no ones.
With nobody.
Yeah, nobody that I knew. I wasn't sitting with people of rank. Now, don't get me wrong. I like everybody. I'm a man of the people. But where you sit, where is a pecking order? My table was right behind the exit door, right in front of the exit door. I mean, you couldn't sit any further away from the dais or from where the power people were than I was. And I realized right then and there, 11 weeks in, that my career was over. At least at that company. All or nothing didn't seem to pay off. But I didn't give up. But I did agree that night with my wife on the way home, telling her I felt humiliated, that I put all this effort in, that I was finished. I went into the president's office the next morning. And I congratulated him on his honor. I couldn't do it at the event. I was too far away. There were too many people and too many tables to get to him. And I told him, listen, I understand there's no job for me. And I understand that 11 weeks in, you can't make any commitment. I want you to know that I've appreciated every day I've worked here. But I'm going to leave the company. And I would like you to make sure that you put together a package that's fair for me. Because this isn't really of my choosing. You have nowhere to put me. You have no job for me, and certainly I see nothing of encouragement. And that was my plan for all or nothing at all, and I left his office. About 15 minutes later, we had an industrial psychologist on the payroll who was a consigliere to the president and the chairman of the company. I find himself in my office 15 minutes later. He says, you're not leaving the company. Nobody wants you to leave the company. I said, I spent 11 weeks trying to find out what my job is. I see I'm gone. So why don't I just make it easy for everyone? Because you're not leaving the company. Half hour after that, he left me. The president called me into his office. He said, I don't know where you're getting this. You've invested your time, your effort, and your expertise. We're not letting you go. What do you want to do? I'm not letting you go. It was at that point there was an opening as the president of the company that I had left. The guy they put in my place was in, he wasn't very good. He left. Let me restate that. They fired him. He couldn't do the job. I should have never gave it to him in the first place. It was open. I asked for the rights to do both of my jobs, to continue on transitioning and going back to the president of the Van Heusen company. They said they had to talk to the chairman of the group. They did, and they brought me back as president. Now, what's the point of this story? I was all in or nothing at all. I never wavered. I always believed that I could get ahead, no matter what obstacles, what road bumps they put in front of me. It didn't matter. I tried and always ignored them. I always did what was right for the company, feeling that if I did right for the company, they would do right for me. And even though in the final hour I chose to put it to them, when I look back, I was all in all the time, and I fought for all or nothing at all. I hope that's helpful. Be back in a minute.
Always in Fashion.
This is Mark Weber from Always in Fashion. I've talked to you before about the Van Heusen Flex Collar shirt, the shirt that moves with you when you move, the unbelievably comfortable Flex Collar expandable collar. I have great news from you from Van Heusen. They have now expanded from Flex Collars to an entire collection of men's sportswear, pants, knitwear, and of course the Flex Collar dress shirt. If you're a casual Friday company, you still have to look right. You're still in business. You're still competing with everyone else around you. Now you could do it in style and comfort. Pants with stretch fabric and stretch technology that allow you to be comfortable whatever your activities are that day. And all the shirts and all the sportswear that you can now buy under that Flex collection are uniquely you. Great looking style, great comfort from Van Heusen, the Flex collection.
Welcome back to Always in Fashion. Here's your host, Mark Weber.
If your heart never could yield to me, then I'd rather have nothing at all.
This is Mark Weber. This is Business on Always in Fashion tonight. But the subject really, when you come down to it, is compromise. You should never compromise your honor, your integrity, your word. You should never compromise your principles and never sell yourself short. Only you know how great you are. And no matter what you come up against, other people's opinions don't matter. It's all about you. Of course in life you negotiate compromise. You can't help it, whether it's with family, business. Every day we make compromises, but it should never be on those things that have that integral value that makes you who you are. I, for one, believe in all or nothing at all, having a goal, a dream, a desire, and going for it. I'm not a gambler, and I don't consider this gambling. I consider it investing in yourself. I hope you enjoyed this concept. I think it's a clever one, and I think it should be helpful to everyone out there. With that, I hope you enjoyed All or Nothing at All.
Thank you for joining Mark Weber and Always in Fashion. Tune in tomorrow at 5 p.m. This show was sponsored by G3 Apparel and the Van Heusen Company. The views expressed by the preceding program are those of the sponsor and not necessarily the opinions of 77 WABC or Cumulus Media.